Hi everyone, I forgot to turn on record, so here we go. This is about my dad. My mom, we went through last week, and today I'm going to talk about my dad. He had a relatively interesting life, and here's the details. He grew up in Montreal, downtown Montreal, and I've talked about his mom and dad before. If I haven't, I'll go back through again. If I haven't, I'll talk about them. They had interesting lives too. I don't think he finished high school. He went to Sir George Williams College or University at that time, took some courses, took the train in every day, and he was working. I think he had to work because the family didn't have a whole lot of money. He was also in the militia, which is, Canada has these things, in armories, and it's, you know, they prepare for war, kind of like the, I forget what they're called, the National Guard in the States, but we call them militias. I believe that's the term they use. And he was joined that. His father was the regimental sergeant major of that particular group of men. I guess women may have been there too, but it was mostly men at that time. And when war came in 1939, he decided that he didn't want to be left out, so he somehow got to Halifax, I assume by train, and he stowed away on a ship bound for England. And he had some trouble, you know, because he was a stowaway, but the other guys fed him food. He was just a young kid. I think he was 19 at the time, and he was one of the first to go over, and he got into trouble for stowing away, but it wasn't a big deal. And he spent a long time in England, as all Canadians did, I believe at Aldershot. And when he finally went overseas, they headed off to North Africa and were involved in the fight against Rommel to drive him out of North Africa. And he was with the 8th Army Field Regiment. He was attached to the 8th Army. It was a Canadian regiment, but he was attached to the British 8th Army under Montgomery, maybe? Anyway, so after they finished there, they did really well there, as a matter of fact. And after they finished there, he went off to Sicily, and they took Sicily. And then I believe the war was pretty much over by then, and he had some difficulties with PTSD. At that time, it was shell shock, and he ended up in a hospital. Nerves and all the kind of things that we now call PTSD, and he had them all of his life. He began to see a psychiatrist later on and figured out what exactly caused it, and it had to do with a sniper trying to kill him personally. In other words, it wasn't just a stray bullet out. I mean, he was there, he was in the artillery shooting off, you know, artillery shells. But when someone is actually trying to kill you, that drove him around the bend. And it wasn't until years later that he figured that out through a very nice psychiatrist in a town near where we lived. So he met my mom. Apparently they met on the street one day, and she thought he was pretty good looking, which he was. And then they got married, had a couple of kids, and moved. I think he used all of his army pay to buy the farm. I believe it was $3,600, which seemed to be an enormous amount of money at that time. And did some farming. He worked at a local chemical factory, did some farming, and generally didn't really achieve his dreams, unfortunately. He later on, he did some writing. He wanted to be a writer like me, and he had lugged this Remington typewriter around during the war, along with a copy of Roget's Thesaurus. But I don't remember reading much about his writing. He also did cartooning. He was a good cartoonist. And of the type, I don't know if you've ever seen them, the war cartoons, the ink-drawn characters. He did a lot of them later on, and he had a different sense of humor. I don't know if they were really funny, but he liked them. And then he took up art. He took up this intaglio art, which is melting beeswax on colors on painting. He did a great job. And then he did watercolors too. And I still got a bunch of his watercolors. He did, you know, scenes, buildings, and stuff like that. And I think they were better than primitive, although they weren't maybe pure art. They were good. He framed them himself. He was a good woodworker. The guy could fix anything. He fixed pumps, cars, anything that came around. He took apart electrical equipment and fixed them. And he was very mechanically inclined, even though he never went to school for any of that, as was his father. And I like to think I am, but I think he was better than I am at a lot of things. I remember one instance how I was very proud of him. He was a big man. He was only 6 foot tall, but he was big and in big arms and just seemed bigger than 6 foot. I don't know how he could be, but he seemed bigger than 6 foot. We were driving to Brockville one day, and I didn't really pay attention to what was going on. But he had been watching the car ahead of him, and he was following pretty close behind the car. And apparently the guy in the car was hitting the woman to his right. He was smacking her. And this didn't sit well with my dad. And I'm not sure if he was going to stop him or not or what happened, but the car in front suddenly stopped, and she jumped out and fell on the side of the road. I could not believe how quickly my father was out of that car going to the woman to try and get her away from this guy. He was all ready to go. He jumped. I guess I don't know if it was a manual or an automatic transmission car, but he put it in park, let's say, and hopped out of the car in the same instant without even thinking. It was pretty spectacular, and I was very impressed by that. He had problems with stress, and he had problems with his heart later on. He had a quintuple bypass, I guess that's what you call it. And finally, it was his heart that gave out. I don't know if it was being tall that helped, but I know in the war there were certain instances where his heart was strained. And then he'd had a heart attack somewhere in the past, as was evident on a EKG or ECG, whatever, I don't know what the term is. And I swear it was one time when he swatted the back end of a cow that he was trying to get out of his property. He loved farming, and he wanted to make the farm successful. He wanted to breed the Charolais cows, and you could do that by inseminating them with Charolais bull sperm, and then gradually, you know, would go down in fractions. I guess you'd never have a fully full-bred Charolais, but we had pretty close to it. Eastern breeders used to come and breed the cow. You'd buy the sperm. They would go and, I guess, when the cow was in heat or something, and then the female, the cow, and in seminary, we got pretty good, pretty close to full-bred Charolais. That was a popular breed at that time, and I'm not really sure why. I'll have to look it up, but they were pretty popular. What else did he do? Fix cars. I told you that he could fix any car, except one time this Ford wouldn't start. We had a Ford, I think it was a Ford. Anyway, it wouldn't start, and he was ready to take the whole goddamn thing apart. It's got to be the Bendix, which is something to do with the starter. I don't know what it is. So I went out. I could drive at that point in time, so I went out and started the car. But the thing I did before I started the car, and he laughed about this forever, I put the car in park. The car was not in park. So you couldn't start it, right? So I put the car in park, started the car, And ever after that, when something went wrong with the car, we'd say, oh, must be the Bendix. Just to bug him. So that's my dad. He always had a closer relationship with my brother than he did with me because they were mechanically inclined. But later in life, I told you about my mother last week, and she had this little this attitude towards me, and somehow in a conversation when I was like 40, 45, 50, he said something like, well, thank God for Brian. And my mother said, oh God, what are we thanking God for him for? Believe it or not, she said that. And he said, well, without him, I never would have been able to use the computer. And that's the thing that I taught him. He was over 80, and I taught him how to use a computer. And he got all over the internet. He did his art. He downloaded different art things, learned all about intaglio on the computer. And it was because of that that he finally got an appreciation for something I was doing. And he really appreciated that. And it was good to see him. He was a smart guy. And computers, when you're that old, are not easy to learn. And my mother never did. She just sat and did crossword puzzles and watched soap operas all the time and lost use of her legs later on because she didn't walk. That's another story. He was good. He was a great guy, and I'm very proud of him during the war. I have the 8th Army Field Regiment book that I will read through and see if he was mentioned in it. And he did win a bravery award. It was an oak leaf. And the oak leaf signifies that he was mentioned in dispatches, which is, in other words, he did something, you know, that notable enough to be listed in the dispatches. And of course he got his name in whatever. There's a paper in London, the London Daily Times or something, that you can search that and find his name. And his father had won the military medal in World War I, so at least that side of the family has a history of bravery. The other side does too, mainly in the Navy, but my dad and his father were both in the Army, in the artillery, with 25-pound guns and whatever else they had to use. It was... The thing I do remember that I should mention is that we had, I don't know if it was World War I ammunition or World War II ammunition. It was 303 shells in clips, five or six bullets in a clip, and they were live. I mean, they were real. We didn't have the gun. We had packs of them in canvas bandoliers. We used to put them on as kids. I mean, there was nothing that could happen. My dad never seemed too worried about it, anything happening. I mean, I guess if we put it in a vise and hit it with a hammer, the bullet would go off or something like that. But we never did that. And we played with them as kids. I forget, they were kept in a box somewhere, and we'd get them out and play with them. And then he also had I found out this later, actually, he had a Browning. Oh, a beautiful little Browning, I think, was from the First World War. Just fit in the palm of your hand. I'm not a gun guy at all. I really detest guns, but this Browning was a beautiful little pistol. And unfortunately, he gave it away to the police on one of those bring in all your weapons or we'll arrest you kind of thing day. And even the cops said, oh, you didn't have to bring this in. It's a beautiful gun. You should have kept this. But he didn't. I guess he didn't give it back. And I would suspect, knowing the police as I do, that gun is somewhere in somebody's collection. I don't think it ever got destroyed. I'm pretty sure it's in somebody's gun case right now, and that somebody is either a cop or knows the cop that took it in. Anyway. That's the story of my dad, a wonderful man. We got much closer later in life. He told me things about his life that he didn't tell the other, you know, my brother and sister. And we'd sit around and have a scotch and just talk about stuff. And he was good like that. He'd talk about politics, same as his dad. And he'd you know, share stories. Didn't share a lot of war stories, unfortunately, and I think that was still too close to home. And I really wish I'd asked him more, and I wish I'd asked my grandfather more about the first war. But they're both gone. My grandfather lived to be 96. My dad, I think he was 89. I don't think he made 88 or 89, I forget. I don't think he made, I don't think he made 90, unfortunately. As time goes by, I will remember more things about him. He was a superman, and according to, in my opinion, he was a superman. And that's the story of my dad. Thanks for listening. Comments are welcome. And we'll be back soon. I won't say exactly when, but we'll be back soon. Next week, I hope. Bye-bye.